there in cities. This award was presented to city staff on February 25th at the Cal Cities Public Works Officer Institute Conference in Monterey. I also want to thank the community for their input during the design phase, the city council for their vision, and city staff for managing such a complex project. Congratulations.
I want to thank the staff and recognize them for the hard work it takes to get an award like this. Our budget is, it's about that thick. It's hundreds of pages, and it all has to be documented very carefully. It goes through a lengthy committee process with our finance committee of two council members. And, it's not an easy task. And some people might think budgets are boring, but being a finance guy, I don't find them boring. A little confusing sometimes, but I don't find them boring. And I just want to thank the staff again for doing such a quality job and getting such an award. And on the Downtown El Camino Real project, I specifically want to shout out Ryan Hayes, who was the project manager for that, but Nick and the DeBar and the entire Public Works team. Not only, the big thing for the public, it's beautiful, it's done. Although await phase two is some extras, like some nice arches over El Camino Real and some other things. And that's coming very soon and on time and under budget. So thank you again to the Public Works staff. So thank you all. Great work. Okay, we're going to proceed on to the next item on the agenda, which is the consent calendar. The consent calendar are items that are considered routine and non-controversial by city staff and will be acted upon by a single motion of the city council unless otherwise requested by an individual council member for separate consideration. We will allow public comment on consent calendar items. So first I will check, though, to see if any member of the council would like to pull an item. If not pull an item, any questions for staff on any of the consent calendar items? Okay, seeing none, I will open it up to public comment. See if anybody would like to comment on items D1 and D2, or I'm sorry, not D1, on items E1, 2, 3. Okay, seeing no one approach, we will return to council for a motion.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Funk, a second by Councilmember Peak. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Peak?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Bobo?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0 with Mayor Pro Tem Daras absent.
All right, thank you. We will move on to updates from the city manager, Mr. Jim Lewis.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, members of council. A few things. If you have nothing going on or you have a lot going on, you should clear your schedule on March 19th at 9 a.m. We have coffee with the planner. These are the place to be. Look, they're so popular, we have multiple ones planned now. Wow, this is great. So this is your chance to ask planners about projects in the community, zoning questions, why things look the way they look. If you're thinking about a project yourself, it's a great opportunity. So March 19th, 9 a.m. at Malibu Brew with our planners. A great opportunity to have them there and get good expertise. For a little fun, 2026 Central Coast Craft Beer Festival is right around the corner, the 9th annual. We're really pleased to host this again. This is a very popular event, March 21st from 12 to 4 in the Sunken Garden with 55 craft breweries, live entertainment, food trucks, etc. So centralcoastbeerfest.com is where you can get more information and your tickets. Our police department continues to engage the community, which we're all very grateful for. And on March 29th from 12 to 2, the Easter Bunny is stopping by the police department. So we're really pleased. We love the Easter Bunny, and we're glad he's chosen to come to Atascadero and hop on over here so you can get your pictures with the Easter Bunny March 29th from 12 to 2 and get to meet some of our police officers and have a little fun. So thank you to our police department for doing that. This next item here is the waste drop-off, shredding, and compost giveaway. So this is really popular. This is April 18th to the 25th. Atascadero residents are invited to a free waste drop-off, paper shredding, and one free yard of compost giveaway. I mean, this is like a game show, and you're all winners. So you can get rid of your paper, get rid of stuff, and leave with free fertilizer. You can't beat that. This is located at 3360 La Cruz Way off of Ramada Drive. 3360 La Cruz Way off of Ramada Drive. You bring a picture ID and a copy of your waste management trash bill, and you are welcome to drop some stuff off, get free shredding, and leave with some compost just in time for your spring plants and garden. Okay, we have a couple more things. This Saturday, March 14th, is Atascadero Day at Cal Poly Baseball. So the game starts at 3:05. You can scan the QR code on the flyer to get your tickets, and just a special day for Atascadero. So we look forward to that. And then on March 14th also, we have the downtown walkabout. This is the 2026 By Her Hands. You'll look for balloons at participating businesses. And this is just a really neat way for us to honor women business owners, artists and makers and musicians. And there's just a really neat walking experience where you can enjoy the women business owners, their wares, what they sell, and some good music. So that's March 14th from 4 to 7. I had a couple other things I want to continue to thank our Fire and Emergency Services Department. We had a barn fire that the smoke was very visible, and they just continue to respond so professionally and quickly and knock these fires down. So I'm grateful for the skill and effort of our Fire and Emergency Services Department. The other thing I wanted to share, without too much detail, we had some terrible tagging downtown. Many people have seen that on everything at Atascadero and other Facebook and social media things. And, you know, I'm really proud. Crime doesn't pay in Atascadero. And I think if you're going to choose to do it, you shouldn't. But if you're going to do it, don't do it here. Our police department is doing a tremendous job cracking these cases. And frankly, we caught the vandals in the act, and they're going to be prosecuted for that. So we'll get that painted over. And our police just did good old-fashioned police work. And we were able to apprehend those involved in that graffiti operation. And I say that, one, to just thank our police department for their work and their skill. But just to remind people, don't trash our community. We don't appreciate it, and we will find you. The last thing I have is I want to recognize Scouting America is still alive and well. It's been in the news a good bit. But you can see these are the great scouts of Troop 123. So hello, young men. Thank you. They're learning their citizenship in the community merit badge, learning about local government and how it works and what they can do to serve their community. So good job, young men. Appreciate you being here tonight to learn how city government works. That's it, Mayor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lewis. And tomorrow night, unfortunately, I'm going to have to run out of town, but there is a Scouting Awards banquet tomorrow night. So I'm sure some of your upperclassmen, so to speak, are going to be there and receiving some great awards. We appreciate you coming tonight and learning a little bit about local government. We're going to move on now to Community Forum. Community Forum is our portion of the meeting that is reserved for persons wanting to address the City Council on items not on the agenda. The Brown Act prohibits us from entering into discussions on items not on the agenda, although we may ask staff a quick question or ask staff to get back with a speaker on any item raised. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we ask you to state your name for the record. First speaker, please.
Jeff Oslin, resident. I want to, first of all, thank Waste Management for making the city junk removal on the proper weekend and the week, because the 18th of April is once again the citywide yard sale. And if anybody needs to register for that, you can find it on the Parents for Joy website, I'm sure. My wife runs that every year. It's funds for the Joy Playground to help with maintenance costs or new shade structures or whatever we need. So you have your garage sale first, and then you haul your trash and get rid of it for free after you take it to possibly like thrift stores for donations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oslin. Next speaker, please.
Hi, good evening. My name's Whitney. I'm with Echo, and I just want to share some exciting news that the modular build will be coming next week. So it's really exciting to see our dream come to fruition. And right now it's just a foundation, but the building will be going up, and we are so happy to have had the support of all of you. So thank you to everyone in the community. It's great to see the 30 beds added and being able to house families who really need it. As you know, there's a waiting list of 300 people, and 1 in 10 children will be unhoused this year. So, and I also wanted to remind you that we have our empty bowls. The Atascadero one will be on April 8th, and the Paso event will be on April 22nd. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for keeping us informed. It is going to be exciting to see those craned in prefabbed, so that's great. Anybody else wishing to speak at Community Forum? Okay, seeing no one approach, we will close Community Forum and come back to the council for the next item on the agenda, which is a management report on proposed sewer service charge rate increases. Boy Scouts, you probably didn't think you'd get to hear about something so exciting as process. But here it is, and we're going to turn this over, I believe, to begin with, to City Manager Mr. Lewis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Before we have the presentation, I did want to share, as we've discussed over this past year, I think one of the most challenging issues our community will face are wastewater issues. And that really involves, and those are financial challenges, regulatory challenges, and just frankly, capacity. As we've discussed over the last couple decades, our wastewater plant, which is a very primitive plant, is very effective and still cleaning water well, has been kind of declared a dinosaur from the regulatory state, that it does not meet permitting requirements and it needs to treat many more new things. At the same time, the community has grown and grown well, and we're pleased with how it's grown, but that has created capacity issues at the wastewater plant, and the plant is at 99% capacity, and I don't think any of us want a one flush per day program, so we need, that was a joke for the scouts to see if they're listening. So, we're at capacity. We have environmental permitting issues. And so as we've talked about, this is a daunting investment. This is going to be over $100 million that we'll need to make in a couple years. And so last year, when we proposed a rate increase to the city council is very supportive of understanding that we needed to increase rates. But the council was also very clear that you weren't just going to be passing increases because, or you weren't going to be passing increases without a good plan and without involvement. And so I just wanted to share that this past year, we've had a very hardworking, very meaningful group of about 16 citizens on a wastewater task force. Councilmembers Peak and Funk have been liaisons to that. And we have gone through the books. We've gone through plant operations. We've gone through alternatives. We've taken tours. And the group has kind of put together some statements of how that we want to push back on the regulatory environment. We want to continue to grow. We want to make sure that our rates are reasonable. And so, and that there is an understanding that rates needed to start increasing to a point until we had more information from studies. So tonight is the second phase of 2 increases of 18.5% we're asking you for. You'll hear more about that in a minute, but I did just want to, on the record, share with the council that we have had meaningful engagement. We have begun a series of studies that you asked us to begin. One of those was an intrusion study. Basically, what a year we picked to see how much rain goes into the system. We're getting great data. The idea being, if we can stop rain from getting into the wastewater system, we don't need as large, perhaps, of a plant with the capacity, which saves millions of dollars. So the INI study is underway. One of the things we also committed to the council was that while we're raising rates under the current system last year and asking you for that tonight, that a new model needed to be developed that was more transparent, more accountable, and fairer. So the water company has agreed to release some categories of water use, so we can actually start putting water use to categories for what you pay for sewer, and really trying to understand how we calculate these fees. The wastewater task force will work through these fees with us and make recommendations to you sometime in the late summer or fall. So we have that study going on. We also have a study looking at alternatives analysis of what type of plant we can build that'll be the most reasonable, prudent, and cost-effective, the cheapest plant that we can build to meet our needs. And so that study's ongoing as well. So we're making a lot of progress. I just wanted to share with the council that we are following through on all the things you directed staff. We're trying to be as transparent and communicative as possible. That said, as you're going to see, we still have a multi-million dollar shortfall in the plant. If we're going to make investments in our maintenance operations, our collection operations, and position ourselves to borrow for a new wastewater treatment plant. So this is a challenging issue. It's going to be something we're talking about for the next several years, but we are making progress. So I just wanted to give that update to the council, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Betts, our public works analyst. Thank you.
Thank you, City Manager Lewis. And tonight's item before you is really the first step in the City Council considering a proposed sewer service charge increase. Just by way of discussion, Council may remember a year ago, staff brought a wastewater rate study in the spring where they recommended a five-year kind of steady potential increases based upon the costs. Both for regulatory standpoint, for the treatment plant, services and whatnot. At that time, it was approved. So that's the kind of the pre-step to doing proposed rate increases. You have to have an approved wastewater rate study. So that was happened last year. Part of that rate study, as I mentioned, analyzed all the different services that go into the sewer system, if you will. And we lost control. Sorry. It's okay. That rate study was critical to determine the cost, looking at the forecast for the next 5 years. As City Manager Lewis indicated, a lot went into that rate study, including looking out at what those potential costs will be. However, some things were not readily available at that time in terms of the true cost of the replacement of the treatment plant. So I want to make a quick note that staff is working diligently as Mr. Lewis indicated, after we get the information from those studies that are currently underway, staff will start a new rate study to incorporate those additional information. So this is, again, year two of that rate study, but staff plans on bringing a new study back for council's consideration when that is available. As proposed, and this is just, again, the first step of doing the public notification, we're having some technical issues. That's okay. I can wing it. What you'll see in front of you is the customer impact as proposed. Currently, the monthly sewer charge is $57.06. With that 18.5% increase, proposed increase, it would raise it to $67.66 per month, an increase of approximately $10.54. That would generate an estimated annual revenue increase a little over than $1 million on an annual basis on top of the revenue already collected. The image on your right would be part of the notice that would go out starting this week should council approve it. And that gives a little bit more detail both on a single family residential and all the other varieties of residential and commercial uses. It's very critical that we compare how we're doing with our neighboring cities. This chart provides a little clarity on it. You will notice, it's okay, that presently the current rate is near the bottom of the bar chart. This is, as proposed in the orange, would be should the rate increases be approved later on in May. It's important to note that we are relatively about the same position each year we look at potential sewer service charges increase. And that's because many, many, many of our jurisdictions in the county and beyond are considering similar proposed sewer increases as costs continue to increase. So even as proposed, we'd still be below the median within our area. Tonight would start the Proposition 218 process. That is a state requirement, among other things, requires the jurisdiction to notify all property owners for 45 days and then set a scheduled public hearing date to consider said proposed increases. That is scheduled for May 12th of this year. That also starts a majority protest process. And so for council who's been a part of this in the past, we will receive protests throughout that 45-day period. And then our city clerk will read those protests live at the public hearing and start that process concurrently. Here is an example of the public notice. It's also included in your packet. It is very consistent and similar to previous notices sent out by the city in the past. It describes what the Prop 218 process is, provides a date for the public hearing, the proposed rates, what this would look and feel for our customers, and provides additional information from state regulations for Prop 218. So this meets our Prop 218 requirement. And I've already articulated some of these next steps, but the critical next step is the 45-day window should council approve this proposal. And then we've scheduled that public hearing to commence on May 12th, 2026. Should that pass, we then work with the county to place those sewer service charges on the customer's property tax roll. That's another kind of administrative process where we'll come back to council in May as well to place those on the property tax. So that's just kind of the timeline, if you will, the next steps in this entire process. And with that, staff is available for any questions and the recommendations for City Council tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Betts. Does any member of the council have questions for Mr. Betts or City Manager? Go ahead, Councilmember Funk.
Sure. For the benefit of our scouts in attendance, is it fair to summarize this process that because we are looking at fees that the city charges, that it has to be based on the expected actual cost of delivering the services, that we have to tell people that a rate change is coming. They have to they have a chance to say we're full of BS and protest that rate increase. And if more than half the people in the city who are sewer customers say no, then the city can't proceed with that rate increase. Otherwise, it proceeds. Is that a fair statement of how this works?
It is.
Okay. Thank you. And is it also fair to note that that one of the reasons we are in the position of having to make the rate increases that we are is because for 25 years, sewer rates were not even adjusted for inflation?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other further questions? Councilmember Peak?
With the data that we're going to be received or received from Water Mutual Water Company, did that have any bearing or change on the EDU classification of each type of structure or business now that we have or will have more understanding of usage?
Absolutely. That's the goal. So City Manager Lewis mentioned the user classification study that's currently underway. We're really looking at a little bit more of a micro level on the kind of categories, primarily of commercial, but certainly some residential, to better understand what that EDU equivalent would be. And we're hoping to have that information, put in a report, and present that back to council. But theoretically, yes, some of these categories would absolutely be modified for the next rate study.
But the overall total would have to equal a certain number. So if one was taken away, one was added to, there wouldn't be a net negative of total EDUs, right?
In other words, you need to raise the same amount of money is what you're getting at, right? So if you lower the...
Everybody can't save money, then we wouldn't raise any
that
money.
Unfortunately, that is correct.
So there might be one industry on this list that, like, maybe for, like, funeral homes, 9 EDUs. If we find out that funeral homes are use less water than that we estimated, they might come down, but we might see that someone else is using, some other industry is using more water than we estimate, or consuming more wastewater, or producing more.
That is correct. Unfortunately, the cost for the operations, the capital investment, the services that the city provides the customers is certainly not going away. What's going to be really fascinating about the user classification is where does that differentiation happen? And yours is a great example, right? Does the funeral home EDU amount increase or decrease based upon our user classification? That's really what staff is interested in looking at.
And the EDU idea may disappear. We may be looking at your water units that you use based on how large your house is or what type of business you are. And so, but yes, we still need to recover a certain amount of dollars for the system. So EDUs could theoretically disappear. And we look at your water units based on the, we have to see what kind of data we get from the water company. And when we get our rate classification study back, we'll have some options for you about how that can be categorized.
So there's a, is it safe to assume that some people might, even with the increases, be saving money and some people might be spending more money than the increases?
I would say yes. That's very possible and very likely.
Okay. That would be next time around, though, because, I mean, this we're approving based on current data.
Correct. Yeah. So the next, we're planning a rate study next winter, and to feed into that rate study would be the user classification schedule, which the council will visit prior to that. Then we'll also have better preliminary cost estimates on the wastewater treatment plant that we can feed into that fee study. So it'll be much more accurate.
Great. Thank you. Any further questions from council? Okay, seeing none. And by the way, folks, we have discussed this issue at great length at other times. So we aren't just, you know, saying, oh yeah, sure, raise rates. We spent a lot of time on this issue and asked a lot of questions in the past. So I'm going to open it up to public comment and see if any member of the public would like to speak on this item. Go ahead. Mr. Oslin.
Good evening once again, council members. Jeff Oslin, resident, property owner in the city, business owner, etc. First of all, I want to thank Public Works and our city staff for bringing this up today in March rather than in May when things have to go on the tax rolls. It's appropriate, and I really do appreciate it. I have a few comments, whether we're doing EDUs going forward or what we're changing. And the comments are this. Hopefully we can get some equitable studies because there are businesses that use a lot of water that are paying very little. And on the other hand, there's businesses using a lot of water that are paying adequate. My suggestion would be that when we figure this out, we actually don't lower the price. We leave it as it is. People are kind of used to paying that. And that will spread out the $100 million going forward a little differently, but we get things more equitable going forward. And we also need to look at connection fees that were approved. But $50,000 for a restaurant, you're not going to attract a good restaurant if you have to build out and hook into the sewer for $50,000. It doesn't pencil out. I can tell you on the property that I own, I pay about $2,800 a year right now for a restaurant that is 40 seats or less. And I could guarantee you that a coffee house is considered a walk-up business, and they're paying not their fair share. So my questions are, let's make sure we're looking at that. Gas stations flush toilets all the time. People don't realize that they actually have an ice machine for their soda fountains or whatever. So we really need to get in the nitty gritty and make things proper. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to speak on this item? Okay. Seeing none, I'll return it back to council for a motion. Councilmember Funk.
I would like to make a comment first before I do a motion, because when we looked at this a year ago, I made some very specific requests of staff for commitments from our city manager, and have worked along with Councilmember Peake on the mayor's wastewater task force. But I ask for, if we're going to do this at 18.5%, 2 years in a row, that the city make a very concerted effort to reduce the potential costs of this plant, to share the costs with others like ASH, to get somebody else to pay those costs, some of them, by getting grants or seeking grants, to distribute the costs fairly, addressing some of the issues we just have heard about, and then to finance the costs and to find some way to help residents and businesses who would struggle to meet these costs do that. It's a little too early for the financing or the assistance programs. But I do want to say that I am going to make a motion that we support this because I have seen real progress in concerted effort by the city on all of those major fronts. It's a lot of technical stuff, but I see the city working very hard to not have this plant be any bigger than it is. And the work that we've been able to do, working in conjunction with Senator Laird and others, to get some leniency with regard to the crazier salt requirements that the state had imposed. I've seen that now. The city is being successful, and we're able to plan for something that maybe is not so fancy. Like, you know, we don't want to out fancy San Luis Obispo in the plant. We need to do something that works for us and doesn't cost any more than it has to. I've seen real effort on all of these levels, so I will move that direct staff to administer the Prop 218 majority protest process and send out the notice of proposed sewer rate charge increases to all property owners connected to the sewer system.
And to set the public hearing date. The other
set the public hearing
date for May 12th.
Yes.
All right. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion by Councilmember Funk, a second by Councilmember Peak. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Peak?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Brabeau?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0 with Mayor Pro Tem Daris absent.
All right. Thank you. We will move on to item H2. Item H2 is a discussion of zoning code update for mixed-use zones and standards that go with that. I believe I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Phil Dunsmore, our Community Development Director. Thank you for coming tonight, Scouts.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. Tonight, we're talking about one of several topics that we'll be bringing you.
We'll address recusals when we get to the particular subject at hand that's relevant to that.
Thank you. And tonight we'll be talking about one of our very significant zoning components that is an offshoot of our general plan and zoning update. We'll have another one of these hearings on March 24th. We will talk in detail about that as well. Tonight I am joined by our planning manager, Kelly Gleason. She will also provide some backup and details, in addition to our consultant, who will provide the bulk of the presentation tonight for the mixed-use discussion. Now, we'll tell you that what we're going to do tonight is run through the entire discussion on mixed-use, which includes these four different mixed-use zones. And then, at the end, we can talk about the bifurcation. I know we have a little bit of conflict of interest, and I think you all understand that. Now, the item on here about mixed use zone 3, what we're going to be recommending tonight is that we postpone the discussion of that until March 24th, given the fact that Darius is out this evening and we have two other potential conflicts on that particular district. So again, the schedule, most recently we talked about entitlements and processes. That was sort of our introductory discussion on zoning. Tonight we'll be talking about mixed use in those four different districts that are currently in commercial areas. And then on the 24th, we'll be talking about what's allowed in each zone. That's going to be a really interesting one. And that's where we're going to get into some really in-depth conversation. I know a lot of you have asked questions about that. And then on April 14th is where we wrap it all up and kind of bring it all together, and it'll be a final look at the comprehensive zoning update before we go into actual adoption, which is scheduled for June of this year, of both the zoning and the general plan. So for now, I'm going to give you over to our consultant with MIG, Genevieve Sherrow, and she's going to give you some of the nuts and bolts about these mixed-use districts. And then as we finish up the presentation, we can get into some discussion about a couple of these districts tonight, and then the other one, like I mentioned, at our next hearing, we'll have to continue that discussion. Thank you. Genevieve, are you on?
I am. Thank you, Phil.
Yeah. And Kelly and I will advance the slides for you. So we're going to start right here.
All right. Thank you.
Can you see the screen?
I can. Yep. See it clear. Thanks. And thank you, Phil. I'm excited to discuss with the council and the public and staff tonight a really important implementation measure of the proposed general plan. So these are the zoning standards for the new mixed-use districts. The general plan, as you know, has broken down the city into these place types in different areas. There's two mixed-use place types. You see those on the left side of the screen. One is for downtown, and one is for these mixed-use locations outside of downtown, formerly in commercial areas. So in downtown, there's two existing implementing zones. That's the downtown office and the downtown commercial zoning districts. We won't be focusing on the downtown zoning districts because we don't really have specific significant changes proposed in those districts beyond making the existing zones consistent with the new general plan, which includes an increase in allowable density from 24 existing to 45 units to the acre. Height in the downtown was already addressed through the objective design standards process that was adopted back in 2024. So it now allows four stories in downtown commercial and three stories in downtown office. So tonight, we're really focused on the mixed use outside of the downtown, the mixed use general plan place type. So the new place type will be implementing four new zoning districts, each with kind of a slightly different flavor of development and a land use focus. So you can go to the next slide. So this kind of just shows the whole city as far as what the new zoning districts will look like as we implement. And if you go to the next slide, we can focus in on where those mixed use zoning districts live, largely at major intersections and along El Camino Real and Morro Road. So in general, the general plan sets a guiding vision for the mixed-use districts. It's really intended to promote a flexible and compatible mix of residential and commercial uses in these focused areas. So this can be accomplished through two different types of mixed use. There's what we call horizontal mixed use and vertical mixed use. In vertical mixed use, that might be what we traditionally think of as a mixed use development. The commercial uses really dominate the street facing ground floor. So the intent is really it's a walkable, inviting atmosphere for pedestrians to walk into. There's public access. They can shop, visit businesses. And above those uses then are the residential units. While in horizontal mixed use, the uses might, they're not vertically integrated, but rather they're located next to each other. So a residential building is perhaps located behind a commercial building. And based on location, different types of mixed use, either horizontal or vertical, are appropriate. So let's dive in with mixed use four, which is really the most intense of the mixed use zones that we're proposing. So the mixed-use 4 zoning district, this one's located at some major commercial intersections. This one's at El Camino Real and Del Rio and down at El Camino Real and Curbaril. So this zoning district, as you can see from the map, it's really kind of characterized by larger parcels. These are generally developed today with shopping center uses. But the purpose of this district is really to support these vibrant commercial zone nodes with vertical mixed use, providing opportunities for additional residential and upper stories to support the on-site commercial and surrounding commercial. So this map shows what the existing uses are. So you'll see a few of these throughout the presentation today. We generally have yellow and orange representing residential. Commercial is usually a pink or a red. Industrial is a blue, and vacant is gray. So we see from existing land uses that the current parcels are largely occupied by commercial uses in this district. So we'd like to take a little Google Street View drive up the corridor to orient ourselves to the existing context. Here we are down by Curbaril at the Smart and Final Extra. So this is one of the sites. This kind of represents the traditional suburban strip shopping center. and across the street from Smart and Final, some smaller scale strip commercial uses. In some cases, these are dominated by parking, like at the Walgreens, and some the buildings engage a little bit more with the street, like at Verizon and Chase Bank here. And then moving up the corridor to the Del Rio intersection, the Mission Oaks Shopping Center is also included in Mixed Use 4, as well as the new Del Rio Marketplace. So the Del Rio Marketplace really does represent the vision for this zoning district. It'll have anchor commercial uses, but it allows for residential on upper floors in these purple buildings that are indicated here on the map. And this vision can manifest in many ways. It doesn't have to look just like Del Rio. This can be, anything with active ground floor commercial spaces supplemented by upper story commercial. So the zoning code will provide the development standards that support this vision. So linking directly to the general plan, the density is limited to 36 units to the acre and a height of 35 feet. The current code also allows for an additional 10 feet for architectural features. We're not proposing any changes associated with that kind of height measurement or the heights. The current height is also 35 feet. So with regard to setbacks, given the large size of these mixed-use four parcels, we want to provide some flexibility for development that could look like Del Rio or it could look more like the other examples that we showed. So the focus of the setbacks here is less about prescribing how close buildings are to El Camino Real, which we will have consideration for in some of the other zones. But this is more about making sure that there's adequate transitions to any adjacent residential zoning districts. So here we have currently under the objective design standards, there was a standard that was added. If you go to the next slide, we can see it, that shows how development that is mixed use or multifamily kind of reacts and considers adjacent single family zones. So these would also apply in this situation. So this existing standard we recommend to keep in place, but we also recommend adding an additional standard because this one only applies to adjacent single family zoning districts. There are some adjacent multifamily zoning districts as well. So we're recommending an additional setback for consideration of addition of adjacent multifamily districts. While the objective design standards set a ground floor minimum ceiling height, it was very low, kind of just a standard basic amount. So we're looking at changing ground floor ceiling heights a little bit through this process. And as we go through the presentation, you'll see that we have some nuances about what the particular height is. And we'll want to revisit that with staff because they are kind of maybe a little bit too nuancy. But we have heard really clearly from developers that higher ceiling heights matter and really support greater rentability for tenants, especially in retail. With some national chains requiring, even 20 feet before they even look at a space. So we really want to make sure that we are cognizant of that and considering where we want to have that high quality retail and making sure that we're putting the standards in place that support that. So with regard to uses in this zoning district, this is a high intensity commercial zoning district. So it allows all types of commercial uses. You can have hotels here, retail, restaurants, services, gyms, all types of offices. The types of uses that would be restricted would be industrial type uses, auto repair type uses, and also any standalone residential because this zoning district would only allow vertical mixed use. So we have some discussion topics that we'd like to explore further with you, but we're going to hold off on these until the end of the presentation and come back to them. So Mixed Use 3 Zoning District, let's dive into this one. This consists of two different parts of the city. The first is up here, a limited number of the parcels located west of downtown near San Anselmo. And then the other portion of this district on the next slide is the stretch of Morrow Road between the freeway and generally down to Portola. And so if you look at the existing mix of uses in this zoning district, it's much more varied than what we saw in mixed use four, with, again, yellows representing residential, gray is vacant, blue is industrial, and red is commercial. So here we see a much larger mix of existing uses along the corridor. And the same goes down on Morrow Road. And note, this information is not 100% perfect. We use a software called Urban Footprint to gather the information, but it really does give us the flavor of, you know, the fact that the existing conditions along the corridor are a mix of existing uses, ranging from vacant to residential to commercial, and a little bit of civic in there too, or probably institutional there. So here we are on Google Street View, looking at the sites in the Mixed Use 3 zoning district, not on the Morrow Road corridor. These sites up here are a little bit larger generally and often have a little bit of slope to them, with the commercial uses on San Paolo Road. And this part really does have a mix of residential, vacant, and commercial and industrial uses in the area on El Camino near San Anselmo. And then heading down Morrow Road, we see more of a concentration of commercial near the freeway. And then transitioning into a mix of residential and vacant, some commercial, some residential that might be commercial, some newer commercial developments, as well as older multifamily developments. So, and then we go to the vision. So this slide represents a vision for what Mixed Use 3 could potentially be. And that is to allow for a wide range of uses, including new residential uses combined with commercial and employment generating uses, and especially offices, via either horizontal or vertical mix of uses. Here's another example of how we can see this vision manifest in vertical mixed use fronting along Morrow Road with residential uses behind, like in this example. Or in this example, from SLO, where we have more commercial fronting the main corridor with residential behind. A good example of horizontal mixed use. So the standards that will support the vision are outlined here in this table, and they will be reinforced by the already adopted objective design standards for mixed use and multifamily development. So those objective design standards really will help support really high quality buildings. What this process looks at is how are the buildings set on the site and what are the uses that are going to be allowed for those properties. So many of the parcels on Morrow Road in particular have double frontage with the backside has a street that's basically a residential street facing single family uses. So this leads to some more nuanced standards, especially for those double frontage roads. So we want to really consider the context of each of these zoning districts and what's happening on the ground today. So, but in general, we're proposing minimum setbacks to accommodate street trees, but also maximum setbacks to draw the commercial closer towards Morrow Road rather than having a parking lot out front. No side or rear setbacks are necessarily required unless the property is adjacent to a residential district, similar to what's proposed in the Mixed Use 4 district. The proposed ground floor height here is 14 feet to accommodate kind of high quality and leasable office spaces. And the use considerations, the general plan notes that this is a really great place for office development. Other commercial uses would also be allowed, including a range of retail, personal services, hotels, restaurants, gyms, et cetera. Industrial and auto repair would not be allowed here, and residential would only be allowed behind buildings, so like in a horizontal mixed-use formation, but any individual parcel would be required to have some commercial frontage along that primary street so that the primary ground floor area is occupied by publicly accessible commercial uses. This zoning district could also have a requirement to have a minimum building frontage. Here we're showing it with 70%. So this means that a building has to occupy a portion of the frontage. So in this case, 70% would be building and 30% could be parking, driveways, landscaping. But really this calls the building to the front of the property and forces that to occur there and to kind of structure the building along the frontage so that we don't have a lot of outdoor storage or outdoor uses there. And here's an example of that double frontage situation on Morrow Road that we're being cognizant of as we write these standards, with commercial fronting Morrow Road and then the residential uses on Amapoa. Again, we've got some key discussion topics that we will address next time we talk about this one. Mixed use two, diving in here. Mixed use two, this is a small area, if you could go to the next slide, that was changed from innovation flex to mixed use during the October City Council meeting. And the intent is really to provide more of a transition from existing residential neighborhoods at Apple Valley into the commercial uses fronting the 101 freeway. So this is proposed to be a distinct zoning district to accommodate a lower residential density than the other mixed-use zoning districts, and to have some specific land uses that provide better compatibility with this area. So looking at the existing mix, it's currently a mix of institutional, commercial, residential, and vacant uses. And it's just this one, five parcels, I guess it is here, for this district. And here's a Google Street View of one of the parcels within this group of parcels. You can see the slope change at the rear of the parcel and really the more rural context than the other mixed-use districts. And thinking about the vision for this district, it's really to allow these new residential uses to combine with commercial and employment-generating uses. And this could include some light industrial or artisan uses via either horizontal or vertical mixing of use, with the residential uses really providing that transition to Apple Valley in the rear, like in this example. So to achieve this vision, the density is limited to 24 units to the acre rather than the 36 of the other zoning districts. Height limit would remain at 35 feet, and setbacks are intended to reflect the more rural character. So with a minimum setback of 15 feet on Ramona, and side and rear setbacks required at least 5 feet, unless the parcel is adjacent to a residential zoning district, so that adjacent property line would be subject to the setbacks of that adjacent zoning district. So if that adjacent zoning district is rural residential with a 15-foot setback, this property would also have a 15-foot setback on its side. So really just trying to be reflective of that adjacent lower scale single family, and no maximum setback would be required. Here, floor to ceiling height on the ground floor is recommended at 12 feet, and uses could include retail, services, gyms, restaurants, offices, some light industrial, that artisan kind of maker space, but no hotels, no industrial or auto repair uses would be allowed. Here we would see residential either as horizontal or vertical integration into the site. But along Ramona, we would want to see that commercial frontage required with a minimum depth of 35 feet to really make that commercial space work. So again, we'll dig deeper into the mixed use two part at the focus discussion later on. And then finally, Mixed Use 1 is our last zoning district. This one is located along El Camino Real, and it's generally characterized by some smaller, more shallow lots, as you can see here. And when we look at the mix of uses along this stretch, it is also pretty varied, with quite a few residential uses intermixed along the corridor with commercial uses. So taking our drive down El Camino, we can see some of this mix of new commercial coffee shops next to homes, which may still be used as residential uses or have adaptively converted to commercial